Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Welcome, Podmanity. One and all. One and all, welcome, Podmanity. And, whoop. That's it. That's all I've got for the whole show.
Cool.
My name is Eric 13. I'm here with Michael Kester.
Yes.
That's a lie. We have tons of stuff for this show. Too many things for 49 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to basically have a 49-minute talking marathon. And one of us may not make it to the end.
I think that's usually how the show goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Man, we are going to consider all sorts of things on the show today that I have no idea where the show will go.
Okay.
Because there's so much on my mind pairing up these two movies.
And neither of us have much familiarity with pickup trucks or dancing.
That is, both of those are true. By the end of the show, maybe you will learn. No, I'd say I have about the same familiarity with, it depends if there's stick shift or not.
Here's what I can tell you is I definitely have a better insight than you on how Texans view pickup trucks.
Well, I mean, I think I could guess. If you have not seen, what are these movies? What are we doing?
Okay, so we're going to do two films. One is, it's a dark marathon. That's the dark marathon. One is called They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
Question mark.
I know that's how that goes now because they fed it to us.
Right. And as always, you're delivering them in the opposite order. What is the first movie?
Hands on a Hard Body. That's how I'm going to say that one. I like that better than Hands on a Hard Body. Hands on a Hard
How
Body.
How many times this week?
Starring Steven Seagal.
Did you have to tell people the name of the movie and then like turn a little red when you said it?
More times than I wanted to.
It sounds sexual, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It sounds...
Well, yeah. Oh, it sounds like a gay porno, which is beautiful. The thing... No, here's what surprised me most about
Emphasis
it is...
Emphasis there is important. It sounds like a gay porno, comma, which is beautiful. Not like... It sounds like a gay porno, which is beautiful.
A gay porno, which is beautiful. A lot of emphasis necessities on today's episode of Double Feature. A lot of times when I mentioned Hands on a Hard Body... people would say, oh yeah, that's really good. I mean, it's apparently permeated culture to the point where humans I'm around are all very familiar.
Oh, but
which is shocking because it's not an easy movie to come by.
Listen, I mean, fear not. I want to talk about something with Hands on a Hard Body that I don't think anyone's talked about.
Okay.
So there's a little teaser for you. That's going to happen.
Cool.
I'm anxious to talk to you about all the other stuff though. We're going to get right into that. Right. If you have never heard Double Feature, go back to what we're just going to pretend is our first ever episode, which is which is like 10 episodes ago. Citizen Kane and The Godfather, show 418.
Yeah. The reason you're here today.
Forget the fact that it's numbered 418. That has just ignore that part. It's show number one. Go back there. That's where everything begins. And once you've listened to that, you'll understand why it's the first show ever. You were going to tell me something about Hands on a Hard Body. Regarding its availability.
Yeah.
And then 24 minutes later, they shoot horses, don't they? What was the thing with Hands on a Hard Body?
Well, so it's not a super easy flick to get a hold of. I mean, it is digitally, but it hasn't always been.
Yes.
It kind of went missing for 10 years or better.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went ahead. Normally when I rent stuff, I rent it, you know, via iTunes, because that's where the show lives, and that's then inherently like renting from my neighbors. I trust them. I instead this time went to the actual website of the movie.
Fuck
and
yeah.
Rented directly from the website.
I'm so glad you wanted to talk about the website, because so did I.
I felt like the website needed my money a little more than Uncle Apple.
It's true. It's true. This is Hands on a Hard Body, themovie.com.
Right.
I don't know if there's something people are confusing this with, because it's also called Hands on a Hard Body, the documentary.
Right. Well, there's a musical now.
Okay. Okay. So that solves that conundrum. I do remember Pray Tell.
Well, and not only that, but there's a musical, and the musical's website is handsonahardbody.com. That's the musical's website.
Oh, those fuckers.
So.
And by the film being gone for so long, I think that's probably it just... Maybe there was some kind of embargo or something.
Right.
I will give you the rights, and if you pay me $10,000 more, I'll also make my film disappear for 10 years. Although I don't think $10,000 is a good price for that. That's barely the price of a brand new pickup truck.
Right.
On the website, by the way, I don't know if this is just a current problem with my browser, but the entire website is a quote from Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
There's an open quotation. This film is a phenomenon, period. And no closing quotation. I just assume, when I look at this website, I hear him rambling each little. If I could do a good Tarantino impression, I'd read you the website, but I can't. Right. So Just go there, do it yourself. So on here, when they re-released it, they did a remaster.
Yeah.
Woohoo. Because there you go. They have no faith it's going to wind up on Blu-ray anywhere. Right. I don't know if that's it.
No, I mean, it's not an easy movie to dig up, but everybody's heard of it.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, the only other reason I wanted to mention the website is same reason when The Interview came out. Mm-hmm. This was the first time I really noticed this. And I talked about that TBM concert film website. It's what inspired me to do that. Mm-hmm. All movies should have their own website that you could just go to and buy it and put money directly into their pockets.
But don't you think that would take up all the space on the internet?
No, it wouldn't. There's reasons that websites just go extinct, like the people maintaining them go away or become broke or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, if Warner Brothers can keep the Space Jam website up for 25 years,
sure.
I think we can.
If Homestar Runner is still putting out Strong Bad emails, you have no excuse.
Oh, man. So this movie, I heard about it first through Quentin Tarantino. I can't pretend it's not Quentin Tarantino.
Okay.
But it's a little bit cooler than every other movie on the show I learned about through Quentin Tarantino, which is his theater in Hollywood called the New Beverly.
Right.
Actually, that might not be in Hollywood, but I meant the more glamorous in Los Angeles. Okay. It doesn't sound as fancy.
Right.
It's probably in Beverly Hills. I don't know. But yeah, they were playing it and I went, hands on a hard body. That sounds pornographic. What's this movie about? Mm-hmm. And that was the first time. It's one of those movies that left my mind spinning when I saw it, because there's a level of profound in it that you don't know how much of it you're making up, or if you're making up all of it, or if the documentary filmmakers wanted to.
Right.
You know, at some level, somebody crafted this. They may have known what they had on their hands or not. There's a guy who's done the contest before, and maybe he sincerely has an idea of what this contest is and feels like to the rest of the country or not. And then there's the people who are putting on the contest. You know, maybe they have a real objective view, or all the way down, it might just be true hard body believers that have no idea how it reminds me of Carl Pilkington, right?
Right. Totally.
I tried to explain that on the show before, and I don't know. Do you have a way to explain Carl Pilkington to people? Profound is the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, it's when something has been simplified so much that there is new profoundness in it.
That's good. That's really good, actually. The quotes coming from these people, especially the guy who's done it before, I found myself laughing and then repeating whatever was just said so many times.
Right.
But not unlike, not because it's not true, although showing up early to put in your ticket because it gives you better odds. I'm not really sure how the math works on that one.
Right. Unless they draw them often.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But I'm not even sure if that works. I don't think there's any amount.
Well, if they draw one every day, then if you put yours in the first day, you increase your odds, right?
Yeah.
Unless they empty it out every day.
I see what you mean. I guess he means if you show up on the first day, but it sounded like he meant if you show up at 8 a.m. when they open and put it in, which only mathematically increases your odds if they, at 8:30, when they refill the coffee machine, they throw out all of the other entries.
Right.
Actually, that doesn't even make sense. I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. But they speak in a way. It also reminds me not just of Carl Pilkington, but we tried to get to the bottom of this a little bit in American Movie.
Uh-huh.
where we tried to figure out what level the filmmakers, you know, the documentary crew probably gets the perception of the filmmakers, and maybe the filmmakers, I don't know. It's hard to know. All of the levels are authentic, right?
Right, right.
That's happening the whole way down. But at some point, you are looking in at a culture that you feel like you're not part of.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a primitive society.
Sure,
you know, there's something about an audience that could begin to be looked at kind of cynically.
Mm-hmm.
Look at these small town people and their truck show.
Sure.
And the fact that this show exists, the fact the documentary about this, I keep calling it a show, this event, this thing, sadistic carnival of horrors exists, means that the people who are at least marketing the film know that you're going to go see it because it's a crazy thing.
Right.
I was shocked actually at how much fun and how much companionship the people in the movie seem to exhibit.
Right.
I thought this would be a horror show.
Yeah, it's one of those things where at first, as a viewer, you sit there and go, okay, this isn't really that big of a deal, y'all. Like, you need to maybe
take
a look at this. But then you realize that most of the people there feel that way at first.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them kind of show up and they're like, yeah, I mean, whatever, I'm going to win this truck. Sure. It seems easy enough.
Right.
And then they kind of get divided into two groups. There's the people who are like, maybe we can, you know, band together, find some camaraderie here and like form a team, you know, on one side of the truck. And then over on the other side of the truck, we have the hardliners who are, you know, I'm not even going to make eye contact because I need to focus on winning this truck.
Yeah.
It's almost like Lord of the Flies.
It is. It very much is. And that's sort of the theme today is the trapped in a place, Lord of the, because mm-hmm. every double feature is trapped in a place,
mm-hmm.
even if it's on your couch for 2 hours.
Right.
It's a trapped in a place, Lord of the Flies type thing. And I thought that that would end up being fiercely competitive in a way that people are trying to, you know, accidentally maybe break each other's legs or something to win this.
Right. Sure.
You know,
call in some favors.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things looking in at the movie that I sit here cynically going, oh yeah, these people are going to destroy each other for this truck. And then you look at them and you go, as you said, settle down, y'all, just a truck. And then once you see that they've all invested in it and they have a companionship that at least I didn't anticipate, I kind of go, well, you can't look down on these people. Like, who's the fuck now?
Right.
They all showed up and are having a great time. And I mean, not a great time, but they're, you know, they just met 20 people that they feel like are family.
Mm-hmm.
And the truck has become a metaphor for them. So it doesn't even matter what they're winning.
Right.
Or how many monies it's worth or what they're going to do with it. Or the fact that they'll have to sell it right away because no one can pay the $7,000 tax.
Right.
For receiving a prize. Let alone the insurance and all of the other things. None of that matters anymore. None of that little nitpicky outsider stuff matters because you see these people invested in something. And ultimately, even past the way the audience perceives it,
right,
or looking down at a small town or any of that, what Hands on a Hard Body enforces in my mind is that once you get invested in something, no matter how silly or small or stupid it is, once you're invested, you're invested. It's a competition absolutely. To the fucking death.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's a truck. You know, it doesn't matter. I've done so many of these things in my life. I stood in line to get an Xbox 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even really want it. And actually, I ended up not buying it. But because they only had 10 and there were 30 people outside, we had to see, you know, who would get tired over the 23 hours of waiting and leave.
Sure.
It was, I think it was the original Xbox. So give me a little break. I was, you know, 16 or something. And it was raining outside at the Best Buy in Chicago and everything was fucked up. And suddenly I went there going, oh, this will be fun. People watching. And then by hour 12, I'm going, I'm going to get that fucking Xbox.
Yeah, right.
These people think they're going to stay all night. They're not going to stay. They're going to get hungry. They're weak. I will win this Xbox.
Look at that guy eating Snickers. Snickers isn't an Xbox food.
I will win the opportunity to spend $400 on this system that'll just be on shelves in 2 weeks anyways. Just the process of getting invested like that in something, there's something really special about that. And it transcends a little bit these different lifestyles. That's the most important part of it to me, is that it cuts to the core of who we are as humans, which is, I think, this kind of breed of a look at how small town people are doing small town things,
right?
Or look at how Southern people do Southern things. When you see that, and then, you know, as a pretentious LA person or a pretentious New Yorker or a pretentious anybody who lives north of Texas, and you notice, oh, these humanoids, they have the same traits that this could be hands on a Pikachu and it would be my life. You know what I mean? I know that we've joked about the Pokemon Go for 12 episodes in a row now.
Right.
But if I'm ever going to say it, isn't this just Pokemon Go? You know what I mean?
Yeah, really it is. Yeah.
Pokemon Go is an unwinnable game that has no relevance in reality. Except that you can occasionally lose a couple dollars on the App Store.
Right.
Yet, once you start playing it, you get invested. You want to take over gyms. Don't even know what that means.
There's also the idea that you could always just end up being the last person playing Pokemon Go, or the last person playing the original Call of Duty.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you always win the whole time. Right. Nobody can beat you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Till the servers shut down. There, I think there was a game, it might have been the first Halo or something,
where there's one person still playing.
Well, the servers wouldn't shut down. They announced the servers were shutting down, but they wouldn't shut down until the last person signed off. So there was this group of, you know, five people constantly playing, trying to get the servers to live on forever. I'm telling you, it's inherent in humanity. It is a trait you see that it's probably an evolutionary thing. I mean, everything is, but the idea that the people or the organisms who wanted to hold on to the smallest insignificant things would prosper, because they wouldn't even have to know the significance of those things, right? Right. So just the idea of a human being having drive and wanting something so badly just because they've arbitrarily, if you just walked by Hands on a Hard Body and somebody didn't show up and there was just a guy standing outside going, hey, anybody on the street can do this. And you go, yeah, fuck it, I'll do it. And I'll kill a couple
hours.
You mean
like the other movie in the pair, yeah.
Yeah, right. Right, totally.
Yeah.
Then it becomes, oh, I have to do this. And I think evolutionarily, if you can become invested in a thing, you don't even realize the benefits of the thing.
Right.
But you start gathering every fucking one of these berries because they have to all be yours.
It's one of those things where once you're involved, you look at the original postulation of all you got to do is stand with your hand on a truck.
Yeah, sure.
And you go,
sure.
I can do that.
Right, right.
You
imagining yourself at the finish line.
Yeah. You don't realize that all you have to do is stand with your hands on a truck becomes longer than everybody else. Also, don't take any of your hands off. Also, you can't lean on the truck. 5 minute breaks. You can't, you know, and every time they add a rule, every time they add a challenge, every time they add a layer, it starts feeling way less like something anyone can do.
Sure.
But what's funny is that the individual parties involved all seem to believe that their demographic is the ideal demographic.
Right.
They do that really funny thing where the younger girl goes, I don't think anybody over 40 could possibly make this all the way to the end. And then they interview the previous winner and he goes, nobody under 30 can do this. This is a maturity game.
Sure, sure.
And I'm sitting there when she says nobody over 40 can do it. I go, well, of course, because younger people definitely have the stamina.
People write about your age, I would say, right?
Sure, right.
Or the ideal
age.
And
then he goes, nobody over 30 or nobody under 30 can make it because it's a maturity thing. And I'm like, oh yeah, right. Because I have a life, and people over 30 may be like, oh, I'm to the point in my life where I can take 2 weeks off work and I go, I don't own my own business.
When you say that, you mean the guy who won a year before that is clearly who Matthew McConaughey based his True Detective character on? You mean that guy?
Yeah, right.
Oh boy, that guy.
I love that guy.
I know. the heroes and villains, man.
If the question were to arise on this show, hypothetically, if somebody were to ask the question, who are you rooting for? Huh, there it goes. There it is.
Nobody's asking that question.
I know I'm not supposed to like the previous winner, but I go, this guy. To me, it's not even about whether or not he deserves the truck. To me, I just go, if you were to ask me in a lineup, which of these people won a pickup truck from keeping their hands on it, I'd pick him out twice. That's why.
It becomes battle royale at a point, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
It's just the returning. I mean, I'm just happy anybody but the Lord won. So that's where I sit on that. I promised you we would talk about something no one else is talking about. So I'm going to do my favorite double feature thing, which is open a can of worms like 2 minutes before we move on to the next movie.
Okay.
Do you know what's going on with Hands on a Hard Body, the competition today?
No.
So you don't know what happened to it?
I know where it happened. I could go there.
About 10 years ago, a contestant drops out.
So 10 years ago, which is almost 20 years after the movie.
I think it's 2005 or something. Yeah, right.
Okay, yeah. So
they're still doing the contest, which why would they ever stop? Oh, here's why, I'll tell you. A contestant drops out after the third day, right?
Okay.
Which, I mean, happens every year. Right, lots of people do that. Yeah. He takes his hands off the truck and in a sort of zombie state, like the younger girl that I was totally hoping would win, who just starts wandering down the road with no shoes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He wanders into the Kmart we hear so much about in the film across the street, and it's not open. So he smashes in a window just on autopilot, walks in, grabs a shotgun, walks out. The police are all surrounding the Kmart now. And he shoots himself dead, commits suicide right there across from the competition while it's still going on.
Wow. Wow.
This guy had no prior signs. I mean, his wife was
saying... Where's the documentary on that one?
I know. His wife was saying everything was fine. And I guess he had just promised her this truck. And the reaction, I mean, they didn't even make it through that year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, I guess, although I don't know where the, I don't know if that makes
where do you draw the
harder
line, right?
Or easier to, but they just kind of walk out slowly and go, let's just shut this down and never talk about it again. We'll just pretend this contest never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last one. And I think seeing the girl wandering down the street, I can see where that would happen.
Totally. You have this fugue state and you have this one goal and then you lose sight of every other goal by day three. For sure.
I mean,
you have to. That's the only way to endure. And then when that goal gets taken away, there is probably a moment, however brief, where you go, that was all I had.
Well, plus you sleep deprive people. And I mean, you and I have both done things, probably double feature before, where we've been up for days straight.
Right.
And at the end of it, I mean, after 2 days, you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, I guess Maximum Overdrive was good.
Right.
You think to yourself at the end of that marathon.
After 500 hours, you're sleeping while you're still moving. I mean, it's...
Mm-hmm.
There is a question in here about... if this is a human achievement that should be celebrated, an odd quirk of humanity, or if this is in fact quite sadistic and perhaps even unethical of a contest to have, if perhaps just this year we saw level-headed people win, but other years it's just the people on meth who failed the drug test at the end. And of course we have to talk about they shoot horses, don't they? So we'll just never find the answers to those those questions.
Well, we might be able to ask some of the same questions, although this is a little bit more cut and dry because it's set during the Depression, which makes this a way harder thing.
Oh, I already disagree with everything you said. every word of all of it. So I'm going to argue that it's more complicated, but probably my fault.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
I think that with it being set during the Depression, I feel like the morality becomes way, way darker.
How do you mean?
Well, because in Hands on a Hard Body, they're going, hey, you want this truck? And everybody goes, yeah. And then they go, do you want to wait around for up to 7 days with your hands on it? And most of humanity goes, no, not really. No, I'm fine.
In fact, all but one.
Yeah. But in They Shoot Horses, Don't They? They go, so nobody has any money anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like $1,000?
Yeah.
And throngs of people go, well, shit, yeah, I would love to be able to survive.
Sure.
And they go, cool, he got to do his dance forever.
Yeah. This is definitely the more sadistic of the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's shot and told in a way that is... has more of a cynical outlook.
You know,
well, and concentration on putting on a good show and so forth.
Sure. Well, yeah, and there's the big showmanship element. I feel like a lot of the parts of the film, specifically the what are they called, the derbies, really shoot this to look much more like a pony show, like a cattle drive. It feels way more like dinner in a tournament.
They shoot it to look like horses, don't they?
Yeah, right.
Is that what you were going for?
Yes, thank you. But yeah, it's so much harder, even though it's not real. I mean, this is semi-fictional.
They had dance competitions back then, didn't they?
Yeah, sure. Of course. You can't keep saying, didn't they?
I should probably tell you about this thing that's coloring my impression here.
Okay.
And I, as you watch a movie in isolation, you may think everybody thinks about the movie this way, which is why we so often talk in the second person, which I know annoys everyone and will never stop. Been going strong for 9 years. That's probably going to keep going. But it actually just upsets random people on iTunes. Go to iTunes and leave us a nice review and tell people, you just type in, I love the second person, and just make that your review. 5 stars only, obviously. This is like Yelp.
Yeah.
And send that off. So here's a weird thing that happens as I watch this, is I refuse to believe this is a 1930 story.
Okay.
I just keep looking for ways to, because there are several definitive things. This gets into weird fan theory land. But there are several definitive things, like when they show up and go, hi, everyone, it's 1932. That kind of make it 1932.
Right.
But this has so much in common with that 70s era of future movies.
Oh, yeah.
Of
sure.
Death Ball Derby Rally 2000. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. all of those fucking movies. Yeah. Rollerball or Death Race.
No, you said it. You said it all correctly. Death yeah. Ball Derby Rally 2000.
Right, really.
I knew exactly what you meant. You forgot to say of 1999, but
let me paint a picture for you, Michael.
It's painted.
Resources are scarce and everybody crowds into this building to participate in a totally fucked up cage match.
Right. Beyond Thunderdome, even.
While the upper echelon waves and cheers for their...
Sure.
This is actually just gladiators, right? This is...
Mm-hmm.
So it started at the gladiator, and then it moved to They Shoot Horses, Don't They? And then it moved to Rollerball.
American Idol, the first 4 episodes.
Right. Well, I think there's a Black Mirror episode that's kind of about this too.
there's this thing where humans have always had this sick desire to watch miserable people, or watch people maybe become miserable or die in the case of gladiators.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so weird about this, is that it seems like I felt so jarring watching this movie when somebody would lose, you know, they would get kicked off and not die. Anybody who didn't die, the host would say, oh, bummer, but they did such a great job, didn't they, folks? And everybody would cheer. And I go, yeah, you know, you wouldn't be cheering for them if they didn't just die. Pass out.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? It feels like there is no affection for anybody still in the race. The affection only comes from the losers.
Well, because you see that guy and he's not in the movie, but he is wearing a mask from The Purge or something.
Mm-hmm.
When he stands up on his bullhorn and goes,
right.
Everybody cheer for the man who just died. Didn't he serve his country well, or
right.
I keep wanting to say, here's my modern take on this movie, but there have already been 50 of those movies.
Right.
And it's so weird to see one and suddenly realize, oh, these are all scarcity of resources. We're moving in a circle, this humanity of ours.
Mm-hmm.
We are repeating past events. And I don't know if anybody has so simply stated, why don't we just do one of those Depression era movies, but you know, with tanks. Is that actually the opening pitch for all these other movies, or does no one Maybe. Realize that's what's happening here? You could imagine it like it's a sort of like when we see a movie in the 90s that depicts, you know, in 2009, there will be no water left on a planet full of water and we'll all be eating space dust and one man, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
And then you get to 2016 and you go, wow, that's, they didn't even have iPhones in that movie. And also we don't have hoverboards. Well, I guess right. you can't say that anymore, but their hoverboards don't even burst into flame randomly. So
do you realize we're on a tangent here, but I like this tangent. Do you realize that there's really two reactions to futurism in films? One is, haha, how wrong were they? And two is, oh no, they were right. There was never, hooray, they were right. It's always, haha, those idiots thought our cars would fly.
Yeah.
And then, sure, oh sure. no, Idiocracy is a documentary. Those are yeah. the two reactions. And I'm sitting here going, I would really have liked the former.
Well, as with...
I'm sad that we dropped the ball on the flying cars.
I still have my fingers crossed that it turns out like her.
Yeah.
Because I think as sad as that might be in some respects, it would also make me probably mm-hmm. happier than right. people eating each other's Soylent Green because the future economy of Brooklyn has melted down and there's a colony of moon men or something. But if you were to go back to the 1860s and be able to make a film like this... as if it's their futuristic version of 1930s.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what this kind of reality they live in reminds me of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because so many things have called back to this era, and it's an era that is so ripe for more stuff like this. I want more sci-fi films, but they're actually just dramas because they're just during 1930.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. I certainly, myself, did not realize what a strong link these types of films have. And in doing that, I feel like I've unlocked this whole segment of film to either be exploited or for me to go back and find other people who have capitalized on it.
So what you're saying is you just want to redub Dune, but they say dollars instead of spice, and you want to yeah. say it's set in the 30s?
Yeah. Damn it. Okay. Is that what Dune is as well? Fuck, are all movies just the Great Depression? Can we bring Carnival back? Does this somehow end in bringing Carnival back? I would really enjoy
well,
that.
Well, no, this ends the same place that Hands on a Hard Body ends, which is a bullet in somebody's brain. That's where
How
both stories end.
that's not a Hands on a Hard Body spoiler for anybody who skips 24 minutes into the show, but it is a spoiler for our conversation on Hands right. on a Hard Body. Yeah. And the way Hands on a Hard Body was spoiled, I guess we should say. But has nothing to do with the film.
It does not spoil Hands on a Hard Body, the movie.com.
Yeah, what a weird thing. This also has the 70s gut punch ending of a sci-fi oh,
yeah.
film.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I'm going to keep making this mental case that this is just BioShock and everybody's trapped in a weird 1930s mm-hmm. world and society never progressed because all that's left on Earth. You know, they admire the sunrise because they're just on a bunker in the middle of the ocean and it's all that's left and it's just yeah. an endless dance competition.
I'm going to entertain.
There is something nightmarish about this.
I'm going to entertain that this is some sort of Lynchian universe that is actually the same universe as Barbarella, where the seconds before the bullet kills Jane Fonda, she has this psychedelic space dream where she gets everything she wants.
Oh, nice. Because of the Jane dies. Fonda link. And also no right. one got shot in the face in Barbarella. That's not a spoiler. There are no, except when Barbarella shot itself in the face at the end by not,
right.
whatever. This doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So in the movie, in the great 1970s ending, it is a gut punch that's, here's what happens with me in this ending. I feel like if I were just to look at the events of the movie, and even looking back now, I go, holy fuck, that is awfully out of tone and character for someone to just shoot themselves in the face. I mean, they were just losing a dance competition. There's nothing,
right?
You know, so yeah. You don't win the money. You didn't have it before anyways. And I know It sucks to lose. And some people died, and oh fuck, this actually fits right into the tone and feeling of the fact that it is not that shocking that someone would kill themselves ultimately is the part that is shocking to me.
Yeah.
That by the time we get to the end and people are going, fuck it, let's just end it all. The fact that I'm there with them and understand why they would say that.
Sure.
That's the shock to me.
Yeah. The shock for me is it actually comes in the moments after the murder where I go, oh my God, they're not going to tell me how this thing ends. And then I go, oh my God, I'm just one of these fucking people watching these people dance.
Yeah, I know. Well, of course that's the other thing.
I go, wait, so this was never about who wins the contest?
I know.
Oh, I feel like I feel so used. I feel so led on. And then I go, wait a second, I'm part of the problem.
Yeah. That's the other great part of this era.
I was so tied to finding out whether or not Jane Fonda wins that when she pays the ultimate price and really loses, I go, so it's probably Bruce Dern though, right? Because
you go, oh, that's not the one I expected to, because those were the main characters I didn't expect. Did you see that weird turn in the beginning of the third act where the one guy goes off to jail and the other girl gets shot in the face? I mean, I really have my money on them. Hey, wait, where's the missing reel? Why does the movie just stop here? I don't understand. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
both of these things about this ending are fucking brilliant.
I hate myself for like in the final moments, just grappling with, wait, but it's probably Bruce Dern because I don't know who those other four couples are.
Yeah.
And then I go, who cares, you fucking tool?
No, that's what the movie says to you when it fades out.
Right, totally.
You don't even get to see who the next person is.
Right.
Yeah, I think that the bleak existential crisis is more the intention of the film.
Yeah.
Even if it's a totally accidental byproduct, the fact that a lot of people in that theater are not going to get the existentialism and will instead go, but wait, who wins?
Yeah.
Fuck this movie.
Yeah.
And that is the horrifying part about your own society.
I hate that they put a baby in the final scene and they go, yeah, that baby's about to be born into this.
Well, that's
dancing
another
thing for the entertainment of the masses.
Right, because it's the year 2065 and resources are scarce. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
How could you let a baby be born into this world? This movie is fucking set in the future. I refuse to believe this was really, I've never seen Hawaii. What? Of course you've never seen Hawaii because it floated off into the
water.
Ocean. I guess that's where Hawaii, Arnie, is. Whatever. It doesn't matter. You get what I'm saying. So the crisis at hand, the fact that this woman would get to the end and go, oh, the system's rigged and we can't get ahead. That is usually where a movie covering this era or even a movie from this era would turn around and find some way to define the system or say, you know, wherever there's a nickel not being properly divided up amongst its employees, I'll be there, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
And this movie goes, no, the system's rigged and life is really crappy right now. You know what? I don't even have the courage to shoot myself in the face. Could you do that for me?
Yeah, right.
That is actually what happens in this movie.
I know. The movie does this wonderful thing where you, if you were to evaluate who won, it's that person you hated so fucking much for bailing because he got a job.
Yeah.
That guy wins.
Yeah.
That guy goes, wait a second, this is stupid. I'm going to work.
Yeah. Oh, man. This weaves in with the putting on a good show theme, of course. This weaves in with the bleak ending. And it ties together this other piece that it's been kind of hinting and teasing us with, which is this flash forward kind of sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Which I want to make like a Damon Lindelof, Carlton Cuse joke, but I guess I'll just spare them because they've probably had enough of those in their lives and let's all just move on. But it really is an odd technique to see these strange flashes of a guy. He's in a room. We don't know why. And then we see he's in this distinct suit. What's that about? And then he gets the suit. He gets the uniform in the present day. And we're going, oh, fuck, wait, this is all, And then, but he's, and he shoots her in the face. Holy fuck, didn't see that happening. Which serves to shock you more at the end. But also, if you think about it chronologically, the film does say more after the final moment. It's just that even what it tells you about the post-dance world is awful. It just continues to be awful. And his message, his, you know, cliche titular line delivery is...
kind of doesn't suck.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It still fits in with the bleak. It goes on to, he had yet another moment to go, wherever Tom Morello is protesting, I will be there. And he didn't.
Sure. Yeah. This isn't a band. This is a social sweeper or whatever. Right. Social club.
Right. That's like a negative 2% joke. That is. I don't even remember where I was, but I saw the band, I guess, or what was a band called?
It's not a band. It's a social club.
Street Sweeper Social Club. And it was a Tom Morello thing with some other people. And they, in the middle of the show, they go, people just have to know about this because it's too funny to not live recorded on something. So just bear with me. I know this has fuck all to do with movies. But this weird, I think they were opening for one of those Trent Reznor bands.
Jane's Addiction, right? Or Trent, yeah, Nine Inch Nails, Jane's Addiction. What was that called?
I don't know.
But it was the Ninja Tour.
That's right. That's right. Which had a sampler with two Nine Inch Nails songs that don't appear anywhere else.
Snapshot of 2011 right now.
Not So Pretty Now. And I believe Non-Entity, which I think had a live version previous, but never a studio version. So there, you're welcome.
You got them. You got them. I'm looking at it. You got them.
Thank you. Street Sweeper Social Club, in the middle of their set, go text 4233 from your cellular phone to join the Street Sweeper Social Club. That's 4233 to your cellular phone. And then you notice these big signs all over that say that, and they go, it's not just a band. It's a social club. So, I mean, obviously the phrase is funny, but even beyond that, they're asking you to sign up for their mailing list. This is on stage, on the same stage Nine Inch Nails is going to take.
Yeah.
Right? Tom Morello, Rage Against the Machine. Huge band. They're asking you to sign up for their mailing list by texting them, like a fucking campaign. Or at the time, it reminded me of one of those really crappy ads for cell phone ringtones. I mean, it was just the most tasteless, awkward thing to do, and nobody was having it. It was probably the most memorable part of that tour. If only I could remember the actual number, Podmanity could join their action network. Oh, well. This is probably the largest tangent you have allowed me on in a non-AC show, in a non-additional content.
This is what you're missing, folks. This is what you're missing.
What I was getting at way back 30 minutes ago when we were still talking about this movie was the film's love to kind of trap in the audience and make them guess and tease out the plot points of the movie. And you see that deliberately with the flash forward. You see them trying to get the audience to come along and connect pieces to surprise and then upon another viewing, devastate them in the end when the, this is what got me on the tangent, I made a joke about Tom Morello. When the Grapes of Wrath ending doesn't happen, but instead he uses that moment to reinforce that it's all fucking pointless and it's a pony show.
Right.
So it's just, there's nothing happy. It's all bleak and doom ending. But I think even in smaller ways throughout the film, and what makes it a kind of a fun film to watch and unveil and think about the world and the world building there is moments like when they have the track part before you find out what that is. Right. Remember the way that's introduced?
Mm-hmm.
They have people painting lines. You don't know why they're painting lines. And then the contestants kind of go, Oh, look, there's some lines showing up. What are those? Oh, that can't be good. And as they move through the contestants, you see more and more reactions of, oh, fuck, it's time for the lines. And of course, you just keep going, what are the lines for? Why are there? Why is this bad? What could they possibly? They're just lines. I don't understand. And because the film has led you in such a dark place, it opens up a place in your mind for you to make things worse than they are. And I think that's one of the first openings of the eventual trap that lead you to considerations of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
That you go, oh, they are so, you know, we've seen these people going, man, we have to stand up and this is almost akin to torture. And then they go, oh no, not the lines. Don't bring out the lines. And once you find out what the thing is, you go, eh, that's not that bad. And then you see people trample each other and some people fall to their death. And suddenly the stakes are so raised that you feel like, wow, I need to be ready for them to up the bar like they just did with the fucking lines. And the film teasing that out a little bit, I think, keeps you more guarded for, yeah, they're dancing and that's bad, but this could get really fucking right, bleak.
Totally.
To put you in the mindset so by the time people are shooting themselves in the face, you kind of go, yeah, man.
At least you're not dancing.
I understand.
Could be dancing.
Right. They took their hands off the hard body. They're out. I actually, in a way, admire them.
Right.
Holy fuck. All right. We have some producers on this fine show. It's David B. Anderson, Greg Winner, Aaron Shore, Kimberly Yance. I've already forgotten how to.
It's okay.
2 weeks. Every other week is not enough. Debbie Sterren, Meta Somerville, David Koch, and Lexi Love.
Got them slowly.
I think I'm actually getting worse at this.
I do too. I think that
not
too.
Not so pretty now and non-entity. I won't forget those two.
Nailed them. Right.
Website is doublefeature.fm. Email address
It's not a website. It's a social club.
It's double. No, the social club is on Twitter at _ERICX13.
Yeah. I'm at PLINGMICHAEL, spells Pling Michael.
Just send off a tweet and ask about the social club and we'll tell you. Tell you something special this time. We'll give you a special
reply. Tell you what to text and then we'll tweet our social club back at you.
Okay. I'm glad we've left a minute here because holy fuck, these next two movies.
I know, right? Aren't you pumped?
Tell people what they are and then I'll just say holy fuck until we run out of time.
So we're doing two films. One is Green Room, which is a film that actually came out this year. It for a long time. It actually was the first movie to beat out Invitation as my favorite film of the year. How's that?
Holy fuck, Green Room.
And it's the same director that did Blue Ruin. Green Room is a film about punk rock and neo-Nazis. And that's really, I mean, how awesome is that altogether?
Yeah, I would say it's a, I suppose we should save a lot of this for the show.
Yeah.
But before we move on to Holy Fuck Night of the Creeps, Holy Fuck Green Room is also a film that is fantastically brutal. It fits right into the core of the types of movies I love to do on this show, but surprised me by being about punks and neo-Nazis.
I know.
Because I think we're doing hard rock zombies when I hear that.
Sure.
I don't think we're doing P2.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Holy fuck, Green Room, but also Night of the Creeps.
Night of the Creeps, yeah. So Night of the Creeps and Monster Squad are the two massive 80s cult gems that we have not touched on Double Feature, but really next week on Double Feature.
Next week we're gonna do some touching.
It's the two most Double Feature movies we've done in weeks.
I'm prepped for it. I'm totally ready.
And it's a blast and you're going to love it and you get to meet the creeper, see the dead in your eyes, watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.
See the dead in your eyes.